The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brad McDonald, and I'll be your host for the program today. Stephen Fleury is making his way back from the United States. My family and I just returned from America last Thursday. We were blessed to be able to spend 2 weeks in the magnificently beautiful state of Florida. So we enjoyed warm temperatures and plenty of sun, and really just had a great time with lots of friends and family in Florida. But we're very pleased now to be back in the United Kingdom, back here in the studio in Edstone. Every time I return to the United States, my affection for that country really is reignited. I lived there for 10 years, maybe 12 years, and it really is an incredible, incredible country. And I'm just reminded of that every time I return. The wealth, the affluence, there's just so many blessings that really are pretty unique to America. The British Empire and the British Commonwealth, as we know, really received incredible blessings as well in their own unique way. But there are some blessings that really are unique to the United States. And every time I return, I'm just reminded, I'm reminded of that. So as it turns out, when we were in America for the past couple of weeks, we happened to be there during the confirmation process of Judge Kavanaugh. So we got to experience America at its, let's say, its most appalling, or we got to experience the United States when this issue really was just permeating the airwaves. You couldn't really turn a screen on, whether it was a news site on the phone or a website on the computer or on the television. You couldn't turn a screen on or even turn the radio on when you were driving down the road and not hear about Judge Kavanaugh and not, you know, have to experience all of the arguing and the bickering and the fighting that was going on as the Republicans sought to confirm Judge Kavanaugh as a judge on the United States Supreme Court. And then the Democrats just opposed that through any means necessary. I didn't really watch a whole lot of television when I was in the States, but I was able to watch just a little bit every day, a little bit of news every day. I was able to turn on Fox News. We don't have Fox News over here in the UK, so I haven't seen that in a few years. And then we don't have CNN or MSNBC or any of those other big stations as well. So I spent a few minutes each day watching a little bit of Fox or watching CNN and MSNBC just to see what the news sounds like and to see what the news pundits are talking about these days. And I mean, I was struck by just the evolution that's taken place, even in the way news is presented in America. And it's the same here in England, although I don't think it's necessarily to the same extent as in the United States. When I grew up, when we turned the news on, you would really see a news anchor sitting behind a desk, and he would kind of go through news events that occurred in the world, across the world that day. And you know, he'd really be reading from Associated Press reports or Reuters reports. And for the most part, they would just report the news. I was struck watching Fox News or CNN or MSNBC, how that's the news these days really is opinion. It's opinion. It's pundits, it's news heads. And they're giving their opinion, and usually it's a partisan opinion. The people from Fox, the anchors from Fox, are giving the conservative opinion. And on CNN and MSNBC, it's Chris Matthews or Don Lemon, and they're not reporting the facts. They're not talking about the news. They're giving their opinion, and in a lot of cases, they're advancing a cause. They're pushing an agenda, and that includes attacking an opponent. But just watching the Judge Kavanaugh fiasco, I was reminded and just struck about just how incurably sick the United States is today. We've talked about this a lot at thetrumpet.com, and Stephen Flurry talks about America's problems and Britain's problems here on this program every single week. But I watched the Judge Kavanaugh hearings and just watched the fiasco, the political fiasco, and just the circus surrounding the confirmation of Judge Kavanaugh. And I just left all of that thinking, this country really is incurably sick. The nation, this incredible nation, really is on a path to destruction, a path to just massive civil and social unrest and government breakdown. It's been 6 years since I've lived in the United States, and just going back there and experiencing America again, it really did feel to me, I could feel the change that's taken place in that country. There really is a palpable spirit of disunity and hatred and tension. And I just want to talk about that a little bit today in this program. There's a palpable spirit of disunity and hatred and tension. Watching the news, and we did a little bit of traveling around the state of Florida, so I turned on the news radio, talk radio a little bit, and listened to that. But there really is a deep-seated hatred for opponents among many people in America, and you know, these are generalizations. But I was struck by the intense desire on both the left and right, but especially the left. I was struck by just how intense the desire is to destroy the opponents, not just to argue against them rationally and logically and using you know, evidence, not just to oppose their policies, not just to, like I said, provide other solutions, but there's an intense desire to really just outright destroy the opponent. There's an intense urge to destroy the system or the patriarchy, as it's some people call it, to destroy the rule of law, to destroy the Constitution. You can really feel, that this country is headed toward a civil war. It's a massive conflict. It's headed toward a revolution. And you really don't have to be all that astute to even know that this outcome is inevitable. I was listening to one of the talk radio programs in the car, and a commercial came on during the program. The commercial was for a website, defendfamilynow.com. You can look it up if you like. But this commercial was for this website, defendfamilynow.com. And this website basically provides insurance to people in the instance that they shoot someone in self-defense, or in the instance that they're arrested for carrying a weapon. This website provides insurance basically for people who are carrying a weapon, a gun, and they're persecuted, they're prosecuted, they're arrested, or perhaps they're attacked, and they use the weapon in self-defense. Which is just listening to that, I thought it was a little bizarre. At first, I didn't know what I was listening to, and then it became clear, and then I went to the website a couple of days later. But at the premise of this website, at the premise of this form of insurance is the recognition that someone, if you carry a weapon, if you carry a gun, then someone is probably going to come for your weapon. There's probably going to be a conflict. Someone is going to come try to take your weapon away, or maybe, you know, you shoot someone in self-defense and you're going to be unfairly prosecuted and jailed. And this company was coming in and they provide insurance for people who might find themselves in that position. But it's just remarkable that at the premise of this insurance is a recognition of conflict. There's a recognition that there will inevitably be an attack on a person's constitutional right to carry a weapon. So this company is preparing people for that. They're saying, hey, for $30 a month, you can have access to our attorneys. We'll pay this much money toward an attorney to defend you should you be attacked or should you be unfairly prosecuted. So you can take out insurance now on shooting someone in self-defense. Or you can take out insurance to protect yourself from having your weapon taken away. But it's just remarkable that not only do people recognize that there's conflict coming, recognize that the radical left is coming and they're going to start, destroying the Constitution and imposing on people's constitutional rights. But they're actually preparing for it. They're actually creating insurance policies to protect people. That's fairly American, too, to monetize that quickly or to monetize a trend like that. But it's just, listening to that ad, I was just struck by, wow, these people, they know conflict is coming. They know conflict is coming. And here they are preparing for it. But the nation really at every level is so divided. It's so partisan. It's so filled with hatred. And that to me was just one of the great truths to take from the Judge Kavanaugh trial. This country is just divided at every level, whether it's in the politics or the sports or in the media. Just watching that Judge Kavanaugh trial, there was no interest in the truth or pursuing the truth. There was no interest in evidence or facts. There was no interest in doing what was right ethically or morally. Even though they would say that they were doing what was right morally by attacking Judge Kavanaugh and destroying his character, destroying his reputation, but there was no effort to pursue the truth, to really uncover the facts. The whole thing was just incredibly partisan. It was incredibly partisan. It was filled with hate. Hate for the Republicans, hate for America, hate for the Constitution, hate for the rule of law. And as I said, it was so personal. I just got a couple of articles here just showing how the lives of some Republican senators and congressmen really are at stake here. It's getting more and more dangerous for conservatives in particular. But this is not about conservatives or Democrats. I'm talking about, both sides really participating in this partisan conflict or this coming civil war. But here's an article from over the weekend, lifenews.com. Republican senators are being targeted with death threats, harassment, and violence in the midst of a political battle over U.S. Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. And then here's a quote from Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee. "There's a lot of unprecedented activity taking place," he says. "We've been through this in the past year, but this is the worst it's been since I've been here." It has a picture of Senator Corker and no offense to Mr. Corker, but he looks like, he's in his 60s or 70s. He's been around a long time. And he says, this is the worst it's ever been. He continued, "I think we need to recognize that it's not going to go away with the final determination of whether he's going to be on the Supreme Court." You see, this tension, this conflict, this desire to destroy the enemy, it's not going away now that Judge Kavanaugh has been confirmed to the Supreme Court. Senator Corker continues, "There's something underlying there that we're experiencing throughout the country right now. There's something underlying there that we're experiencing throughout the country right now that we've got to figure out a way to address." You see, here's a senator. He recognizes there's something nefarious underway here. There's something really, really dangerous underway. There's a spirit here that is unprecedented in America's history. And it's very, very dangerous. And he's right. And again, Stephen Flurry on this program and his dad, Mr. Gerald Flurry, they've been talking about this for years now. Mr. Gerald Flurry has written books, America Under Attack, Great Again. Both of those books really identify and expose the spirit, the underlining spirit that Senator Corker was talking about here. I'll just end the quote there. Here's another one from Fox News. This one is Senator Cory Gardner, a Republican from Colorado. He revealed on Fox News on Sunday that his wife had received a graphic text message with a video depicting a beheading, and that someone has publicly posted the names and addresses of his family members. So someone from the public obviously got hold of his wife's mobile phone number, and they texted her images of a decapitation. This is the state of American politics. This is the state of American culture and society. You read these things, and you can just see that conflict is coming. Conflict is coming. And no movement, no institution, no ideology is emerging to stave off this conflict. Just a couple more quotes here. Here's one from October 4th. So I think this was last Thursday. This is from the Rasmussen reports. Despite America's increasingly partisan, I'll skip down. A new Rasmussen reports national television and online survey finds that 65% of likely U.S. voters think there is a greater danger of political violence these days. 65% of likely U.S. voters think there is a greater danger of political violence these days. Now, that's down a little bit from June 2017, but when the Rasmussen report was taken in June 2017, that was right after, I think it was the gun attack in Las Vegas. In 2016, 61% feared that there was a greater danger of political violence. So it's gone up. Here's another one from June. This is Rasmussen as well. 31% of likely U.S. voters say it's likely that the United States will experience a second civil war sometime in the next 5 years. And 11% say it's very likely. So one-third of Americans believe that it's likely that the United States will experience a second civil war sometime in the next 5 years. And you can feel that. You can, I mean, it's anecdotal, I know, but just being in America, watching the news, talking to people, listening to commercials, advertising insurance, should you be arrested for carrying a gun or shoot someone in self-defense, you can sense that even ordinary, everyday Americans, and, you know, most of whom, the facts show, most of them don't even, like Congress or support their leaders that ardently. But even they recognize and sense that a conflict is coming, that a civil war is coming. One-third of Americans believe it's inevitable over the next 5 years. Just reading all of this and being in America and feeling the tension and you know, watching the news, watching the pundits on the news, watching, you know, Don Lemon and I don't know, whoever his counterpart would be on Fox News, watching them kind of go at each other, watching them go at each other on Twitter or social media. It really is clear that this country is headed for big trouble. You know, when I left the United States and just making these observations, you know, it really did make me so grateful for Bible prophecy. And even more than that, it really, and I talked about this a little bit with my kids, but watching all of these events, it really did strengthen my faith in Bible prophecy. You know, this Judge Kavanaugh debacle really was compelling evidence proving Bible prophecy true? If you've been listening to this program, if you've been following thetrumpet.com over the past few years, you would have heard Mr. Gerald Flurry and Stephen Flurry and trumpet writers writing about prophecies in Isaiah chapter 1 and Ezekiel chapter 7. Isaiah's prophecy in chapter 1 says, quote, "Your country is desolate, your cities are burned with fire, your land, strangers devour it in your presence, and it is desolate, as overthrown by strangers." It's talking about civil war. It's talking about race war. And you can feel it. You can see it happening. You can see it building. In chapter 7, the prophet Ezekiel wrote, "Make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes, and the city is full of violence. Destruction comes, and they shall seek peace, and there shall be none." Again, you can see it building. You can see it happening. You can hear it happening. You can hear senators. You can hear leading Americans. You can hear leading TV commentators advocating for a revolution and for conflict and for violence. It's pretty routine now in America to hear prominent leaders, congressmen, senators, Hollywood stars, calling explicitly for protests and civil unrest and even revolution. We've just got a couple of sound bites here just making this point. Here's a sound bite from Congresswoman Maxine Waters. She's a Democrat from California. And this is a statement she made after the Judge Kavanaugh debacle.
"I wake up in the middle of the night and all I can think about is I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him. I'm in this fight and I'm not going to move. And as you know, there's a difference in how some of our leadership talk about how we should handle all of this. They say, 'Maxine, please don't say impeachment anymore.' And when they say that, I say, 'Impeachment, impeachment, 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 impeachment.'"
See, this is the same woman who just a couple months ago, she told her supporters that they needed to stand up to Donald Trump, people in Donald Trump's administration and Trump supporters in restaurants, in gas stations, in public places. And now here she is, and you know, she says that she's awake at night and she's thinking, all she can think about is, "I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him." This is the state of American politics. I mean, there was a time when senators like Maxine Waters on the opposition, they would lay awake at night and think about maybe policy, or maybe they would think about their argument, about how they could argue rationally using evidence that the policies Donald Trump was promoting were wrong, and then how they could go to the American people and rationally using evidence, they could argue that the policies, their policies were right and would be good for the country. But for a lot of American politicians now, they're not thinking about policy. They're not thinking about rational arguments. They're not thinking about facts. They're not thinking about you know, how they can you know, sufficiently argue, rationally argue their case. Instead, as Maxine Waters says there, she's thinking about, "I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him." She said it three or four times. "I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him." And when you look at some of the other statements that Mrs. Waters has made, she doesn't want to just get Donald Trump. She also wants to get his supporters. She also wants to get members of his cabinet. Here's another statement, public remark. This one comes from Senator Cory Booker. I think he's a Democrat senator from New Jersey. And again, he made this statement after the Judge Kavanaugh fiasco.
"There is so much at stake here that this has nothing to do with politics. This is to do with who we are as moral beings. And so I want to call on everybody. I'm not here to tell folk just what they should know. I'm here to call on folk to understand that in the moral moment, there is no neutral. In a moral moment, there is no bystanders. You are either complicit in the evil. You are either contributing to the wrong or you are fighting against it.
Look at that. Look at those just fighting words. He says you're either complicit in the evil, or you are either contributing to the wrong, or you are fighting against it. That's what this constitutional process now is to some of America's leaders. That's what this democratic process now is to some of America's leaders. It's evil. It's evil. I mean, what we just witnessed in America was the constitutional system at work. I think it was Senator Lindsey Graham, right, Sam? I think it was Senator Lindsey Graham who told the senators in Congress that, you know, we won, we have a majority in the Senate, and we're simply, you know, doing what the Constitution allows us to do. This is democracy at work. But to Senator Booker here, you're either complicit in the evil, or you're fighting against it. You see, this constitutional process, this democratic process, to Mr. Booker, to his followers, to sadly many Americans, it's evil, and it must be opposed. It must be, you know, fought against. Just one more quote. This what you're about to listen to is this is audio. I was going to say audio footage, but I guess it's not footage. But this is audio of protesters outside the Supreme Court. I think it was late last week or over the weekend. That clip was probably a little longer than it needed to be. The protesters weren't saying anything just too intellectually enlightening. All they said was shut it down. Groups of protesters banging on. You can actually go on, I think it's YouTube or somewhere like that, but you can go online and you can watch footage of protesters at the Supreme Court chanting, shut it down. And some of the protesters, they're literally crawling on the wooden doors of the Supreme Court, prying on the wooden doors, trying to get in. And they're saying, shut it down. Shut down the Supreme Court. Let's shut down this building that symbolizes law and the rule of law in the United States. And really, that's what they want to shut down. They want to shut down law. They want to shut down the rule of law. They want to shut down the Constitution. And when you listen to that clip, and even more so if you watch the footage, you know, you really do get a sense that there's a darker spirit at work. You know, you really do get a sense that you know, this was more than just, let's say, human emotion or you know, a fleeting frustration on the behalf of these protesters. You've probably seen the clip of Madonna saying that she dreams about blowing up the White House. I had another clip that I was going to play for you of Bill Maher. I think he's a comedian, the comedian Bill Maher. And we're not going to play it, Sam. But in the clip, Bill Maher compares Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. And he's also compared Trump supporters to Hitler supporters. But in this clip, Bill Maher takes a speech from Adolf Hitler. And then, you know, using a voiceover, he makes out that it's a Donald Trump speech. But this is the state of America. It's the hatred is so personal. Again, you know, in that clip, Bill Maher isn't arguing against Donald Trump's policies. He's not arguing against the policies of the Conservative Party. And he's not making a case, you know, a rational, well-reasoned, factual case where he kind of lays out, let's say, the Democratic Party's solutions to America's problems. Instead, where we're at is we have two sides, not just one side, although I would say one side is more adept at it and is more ferocious than the other. But we have two sides just attacking each other, and it's so personal. It's so filled with hate. And again, when you go over there and when you experience that and when you witness that, it really is hard to see a long-term future for the United States. And when you witness all of this with Bible prophecy in mind, it's just so obvious that these prophecies in Isaiah and Ezekiel, these prophecies that Mr. Gerald Flurry has been warning us about for years and years now, they are so close to being fulfilled. The civil war that the Bible says is going to come to America, it is coming, and you can really see it, you can feel it. Okay, we'll take a break, and then when we come back, we'll continue talking about this theme, but we'll maybe take it to a deeper level.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back. This is Brad McDonald standing in for Stephen Flurry today. I'm just talking about my recent experience in the wonderful nation of the United States, a nation that, in my opinion and from my observation the past couple of weeks, really is on the precipice of extreme social unrest and civil unrest. And in the first half of the program, we were just talking about how much hatred and tension and animosity there really is now in the United States at every level, at every level. I wanted to start this segment by talking about the term dehumanize. Dehumanize, the Oxford Dictionary defines dehumanize this way. It says it's the process of depriving a person or group of positive human qualities. Dehumanize, the definition is the process of depriving a person or group of positive human qualities. So when you dehumanize a person, you no longer recognize their human rights. Maybe you no longer recognize that they have human emotions and human connections. Now, of course, there's different levels of dehumanization. But when a person has been, let's say, ultimately dehumanized, the aggressor no longer considers that person human. They might see that person, their opponent or enemy, more like an animal or even an inanimate object. And I bring up this term dehumanize because I really feel like that we see a culture of dehumanization of the enemy taking root in America today. There's a culture of dehumanization taking root in the United States. It's not enough to simply oppose the other side or to oppose the opposition's policy or idea or even ideology. More and more we see, you know, one side opposing the very person on the other side. The opposition isn't merely wrong, or the opposition isn't seen or considered to have a flawed argument. The opposition, for many people, is evil. The opposition, for many, is wicked. The opposition, for many, is just inherently wrong. And there's actually evidence that dehumanization of opponents is increasing in the United States. Professors at Vanderbilt University earlier this year conducted two studies on dehumanization in America. And in one of the studies, respondents were asked to rank members of their own political party and the opposing party on the evolutionary scale. And in the survey, they had pictures of the evolutionary scale. So on one side, they had, you know, ape-like men. And then, you know, as you moved across the spectrum, you came to Neanderthals. And then on the other side of the spectrum were modern humans. And people were asked to rank, you know, where do members of their own party fall on this spectrum? And where do members of the opposite party fall on this evolutionary spectrum? This is what, I forget his name, but one of the authors of the study wrote. 77% of our respondents rated their political opponents as less evolved than members of their own party. So I understand, you know, that the premise of all of this is kind of the evolutionary scale of man, and that premise is entirely wrong. But 77% of our respondents rated their political opponents as less evolved than members of their own party. So, and this applies to both Democrats and Republicans. But Democrats, you know, 77% of Democrats considered Republicans to be less evolved than they were. And it was the same for Republicans. The author continues. Respondents who considered themselves strong partisans were likely to dehumanize opposing partisans. And Republicans and Democrats were equally likely to dehumanize their opponents. This is a really interesting, and this is a really, really dangerous trend, where we see more and more people dehumanizing their opponents, dehumanizing fellow Americans. I'll just read a quote from Michael Gerson. This is from his September 24th column. This is what he writes. There is, of course, a mirror image problem of pro-life activists who regard pro-choice people as murderers. But that is precisely the point. There is a strong current of dehumanization running in our politics. There is a strong current of dehumanization running in our politics, he writes. The rival crew, it turns out, is not only wrong, but evil. And how can mortal enemies embrace the give and take of a shared political project? See, the rival crew, the opposing party, if you're a Democrat, the Republicans. And the Republicans, then they'll be thinking this way about the Democrats. The rival crew, as it turns out, is not only wrong, but evil. And then, as he says, how can mortal enemies embrace the give and take of politics when they consider the other side evil? Then he writes, only the raw exercise of power can decide between them. See, if the other side is evil, then there's less of a need. In some cases, there's no need. There's no desire to argue rationally using evidence. The desire is for conflict, struggle, war, because they're evil and you have to confront evil. The article continues, the goal is no longer to win arguments, but to crush opposition. And that's, I mean, this was written before the Judge Kavanaugh confirmation and everything that went on there. The goal is no longer to win arguments, but to crush opposition. And that's American politics today. It's less about the argument. It's less about the policy. It's not really about Judge Kavanaugh. It's about crushing the opposition, destroying the opposition. In this case, it's the radical left seeking to destroy Donald Trump's agenda. The article continues, "This is the moral risk of extreme political polarization, dehumanization. In our circumstance, it has emerged in the bipartisan dehumanization of political opponents and in the nativist dehumanization of certain groups, migrants, refugees, and Muslims." So, liberals would say that Donald Trump, dehumanizes migrants and refugees and Muslims. But then conservatives, I don't know if conservatives would say this, but just watching the instance of Judge Kavanaugh, the radical liberals, they're dehumanizing, successful white men. They're dehumanizing constitutionalists. They're dehumanizing people who believe in the rule of law. But the overall point is people on both sides are dehumanizing their opponents. We're increasingly seeing people consider their enemies less and less as human beings with human emotions and human attachments and human family connections. This is a terrifying trend. It's a terrifying trend. Herbert Kelman, he's a psychologist who studied dehumanization. He said, this is what he said. "When an opponent is no longer considered human, the principles of morality no longer apply." When an opponent is no longer considered human, the principles of morality no longer apply. See, when the opponent is no longer perceived as human, it becomes a lot easier to inflict pain and to inflict persecution and to inflict violence and suffering. When the opponent is no longer perceived as human, it becomes a lot easier to really extinguish them. If a person's no longer perceived as human or perceived less as a human, then, they're not thought to have emotions. They're not thought to have human rights. They're not thought to really experience pain. And it's, as I said, it's so much easier to inflict violence and suffering on a person, a fellow human being, when you don't consider them human. I mean, we've seen this historically. We've seen this historically. We saw this with Hitler and with his view of the Jews. Hitler really didn't even consider Jews to be human. He referred to them as rats. He referred to them as parasites. He said, the Jews, in Hitler's mind, they didn't live in homes. They lived in nests. And, Jews didn't have families. They had packs. When they were imprisoned at the start of World War II, they it wasn't their name tattooed onto their arm. They were given a number. They were nameless. They weren't humans. And I think, I haven't had a chance to really study into this, but I think it's interesting to look at the process of dehumanization and where the process of dehumanization ends. But, at first, if you look at Nazi Germany, at first, the dehumanization of the Jews was manifested in just prejudice. The Jews were isolated. The Jews were scorned. The Jews were verbally abused. Let's say, in the early to mid 1930s, and then after that, the Jews began to be blamed as the cause of Germany's problems and the world's problems. And then by 1935, 1936, 1937, the prejudice turned into active discrimination. We have the Nuremberg Laws. The Jews weren't allowed on public transport. Jewish children weren't allowed to attend school with German children. They were banned from shops and theaters and banks. And then eventually and inevitably, the Jews were herded like animals into prisoner of war camps and killed. slaughtered. And I mean, that's, I mean, this is serious stuff. This is sobering stuff. But again, the Bible prophesies of civil war. The Bible prophesies of humans. The Bible prophesies of Americans. 21st century Americans, sophisticated Americans, enlightened Americans, and British, but we're talking about America today. The Bible talks of 21st century Americans, university-educated Americans, committing some really, really horrible acts of violence against fellow Americans. And that sounds so absurd today. That sounds so absurd, especially since those that you know will commit these acts so often sell themselves as being incredibly tolerant and multicultural and enlightened when it comes to you know the way they treat other human beings and inclusive. How does it happen? How can you know one human commit such a horrible act on another human? Well, the dehumanization of the opponent, the dehumanization of the enemy has something to do with it. When you no longer see the opponent as a human, when you no longer see your opponent as being a family man, when you no longer see your opponent as having human rights, as having emotions, when you no longer, you know, recognize that your opponent has views and thoughts and opinions, when you increasingly see your opponent as you know more like an animal or you know as we saw, when you see the opponent as something that's evil, then he's less of a human and he's more like an inanimate object, or maybe he's more like an animal. And when your opponent or when your enemy is more like an animal or an inanimate object, then it's much, much easier for you to persecute them, to treat them, you know, in unimaginable ways. And we really are seeing the proclivity to dehumanize set in the United States. It really is becoming more and more firmly rooted in American politics and American culture and American entertainment. I mean, we read a quote there where people with opposing views, they weren't, you know, I think it was Senator Booker. He didn't say that they were ill-informed. He didn't say that their argument was wrong. He didn't say that they were ignorant. He said that they were evil. Let me just read a quote. This article comes from Quillette. It's an Australian based website, Quillette, and this is from October 4th. The title is "The Curious Reemergence of Little Platoons," and this is more anecdotal evidence that this proclivity to dehumanize the enemy is setting in America. So this person went to what is known as a Better Angels workshop. You can look up the website if you like. It's called Better Angels. This was a Better Angels workshop, one of hundreds of such gatherings happening in communities across the country, which aims to unify a deeply divided nation. So this term Better Angels came from a speech Abraham Lincoln gave right before the Civil War. The article continues, like Lincoln, Better Angels seeks to heal a broken America by improving our public discourse. The volunteer-led workshops teach skills of human connection, paraphrasing, listening, asking questions of understanding, and how to offer a critique of one's own political position, not of persuasion. The intent is not to minimize differences or to convert. It is to humanize others who think differently, ultimately to make us less inclined to demonize others and more inclined to peacefully coexist. So in America now, there are institutions, there are organizations that have been created whose intent is to help Americans get along. That's what this Better Angels program is all about. And I went to the website and looked it up, but all across the country, Better Angels leaders, representatives, are getting groups of seven Democrats and seven Republicans into the same room, and they're teaching Democrats and Republicans how to be in the same room as one another. They're teaching Democrats and Republicans how to listen to one another, how to, you know, how to refrain from condemnation, how to get along. I mean, it's a noble cause. And it's not just Better Angels. There's one called Slate Star Codex Rationalist. There's there are Benjamin Franklin circles. You can look these up. Benjamin Franklin circles. I looked that website up. But this is an organization that encourages people to get together in groups or circles. And in those circles, they talk about, I think it's Benjamin Franklin's 13 rules of virtue. And they talk about how they can make the country better and how they can build unity. There's the National Coalition for Dialogue and Deliberation. You see, people recognize that America is experiencing something unprecedented. They recognize that the partisanship is fatal. And these little organizations, these little websites, and these little institutions, they're doing their best to get Americans together and to teach Americans how to talk to one another, how to listen to one another. Now, sadly, they're up against Satan the devil. And you know, Bible prophecy shows that the end is going to be conflict. But the fact that these institutions have even come into existence shows that America has a major problem with division, a major problem with partisanship, and a major problem with dehumanization, the dehumanization of opponents. Just one last quote from this article, this Quillette article. This propensity to dehumanize, which history shows us tends to go hand in hand with targeted violence, is alarming and underscores the urgent need for groups to promote person-to-person interaction. So America is now a country where private organizations are coming together and teaching people how to talk to one another, teaching people how to be civil. Stephen Flurry has read to you many times the prophecy over in 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 5. I'll just read verse 1. Timothy writes, or Paul writes to Timothy, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come." So this is an end time prophecy. He continues, "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy." Verse 3, it says, "without natural affection." And maybe that's an abstract term, without natural affection. Well, what does that mean? What does that mean, without natural affection? Well, you can look at American politics today. You can look at American culture today. And as I said, you can look at British culture today as well. And you can see people behaving without natural affection toward one another. People attacking one another as if the other side is an animal. Attacking and brutalizing someone else as if the other side isn't even human. I mean, you look at some of the treatment of Brett Kavanaugh and the way his family was attacked. His two daughters, I think he's got two young daughters. And those that attacked Brett Kavanaugh, I mean, they didn't recognize that. They didn't recognize that this was a father with two young daughters. That's because they didn't see him as... Well, they saw him. They didn't see him as 100% human. Let's put it that way. I can't speak to how much the dehumanization of the enemy has taken place in every case, but we are witnessing the dehumanization of opponents occurring, and it's a frightening trend. But it is also the fulfillment of Bible prophecy. See, without natural affection, that's really the same thing. The dehumanization. without natural affection means, you know, it's a time when people will be cold, they'll be heartless, they'll be without compassion, without empathy, without mercy. They'll be without natural affection. They won't view other humans as fellow humans. And we're moving into that time. Again, these are serious, serious times. The United States, well, I was there for 2 weeks and I loved every moment of it. And it's a wonderful country. It's an incredible nation. But it really is an incredible nation that is now on the cusp of an incredible decline. And just as I left that country and just thinking about what I witnessed over the past couple of weeks, it really did make me so thankful for Bible prophecy, so thankful for the trumpet, so thankful for the church, so thankful for Gerald Flurry who teaches this truth, so thankful for the truth, so thankful for understanding, so thankful to know that America's inevitable collapse and Britain's inevitable collapse, really, it really isn't the end, as the Bible teaches us. It really is just the start of something really wonderful, the start of the return of Jesus Christ and the establishment of his government on this earth. Good to be with you. I believe Stephen Flurry is back in the studio live from Edstone tomorrow.